You're listening to Over the Line on Galway Bay FM, the sporting sound of Galway.
And you're very welcome back to Over the Line, the second part of Over the Line, which is, of course, every week consists of our panel discussion. And once again, our thanks to Mac Hansen. It was a revealing chat with Mac Hansen. He was in earlier on, different than what you would think, but certainly is, and he's speaking to him off air, he is champing at the bit to hopefully get back on the field of play before the season ends. He thinks he will, but again, it's down to the medical people. God be with the days, lads, when you'd play, no matter what was wrong with you, there was with the days. But this evening, our guests on Over the Line panel are Adrian O'Neill and Kian O'Connell. Very welcome, gentlemen, and thanks for joining us. John Mulligan is back again. And with John, we spoke just before the interview with Mac Hansen about the great weekend in sport, but also some tough injuries to take as well. But all in all, it was a very good weekend, starting with the success of, sorry, the draw that Galway United. I think it should have been a success. We'll talk a bit more about that, about the man who was on duty at the Tallaght Stadium earlier this week. But overall, good performance by Galway lads, or was it a getting out of jail card, John?
Yeah, well,
you were enthusiastic. You thought it was a great performance early on.
I thought so.
I wouldn't.
The Galway United one or the
Galway Hurling? No, the Galway Hurling.
Oh, I thought the Galway Hurlers were. Well, I thought it was an excellent performance, considering you're 2 points down in injury time. Lesser Galway teams might have just given up the ghost and says, lads, it's a group game, we'll rebuild for the final. They didn't. Evan Nyland got a brilliant point, scored 7 points after coming on as a sub. And then you had that point from Conor Whelan that levelled matters deep in injury time. And, you know, look, it still keeps our record against Kilkenny pretty good at home, actually. I think Sean Walsh made the point that Galway have never lost to Kilkenny in a Leinster Championship game played in Pearse Stadium. So it was a good performance. Actually, overall, it's been a good performance right across the weekend. Well, we'll talk about Galway United later on, but the Galway Minor Hurlers, after the trimming they got in round one, really picked themselves up to beat Dublin. That was a great win for them on Saturday afternoon. And then, of course, the Galway Seniors on Sunday. So, you know, it's not been overall.
The minor footballers went down, though.
Well, yeah, it's I watched it, and I don't know. It was Minigan's boys. Now, there was a lad who plays for Mayo, and he is MacDonald, no prizes for guessing whose son. And he has been phenomenal at playing schools football. He's been phenomenal playing for his county. They think that he is definitely as good, if not even better, than his dad. And I wouldn't be surprised. He was fantastic on Friday. Mayo have a very, very good team, must be said. Feel for Neil McHugh and his lads, because they are putting in the effort. They're working really hard. It's just not happening. Just not happening for them. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, but I think in both codes, and in a lot of codes, is a lot of questions have to be asked. Where is the development? What's happening? Is there a proper pathway? It's a discussion we'll hopefully return to in the next couple of weeks. Where is the pathway for players coming through from underage level? Kian, you look at back at yesterday, did you think, well, Galway fortunate yesterday in your mind, and you're a man that goes to a lot of games. I just thought we're lucky.
Well, in the end, George, if you look at it, in the stadium, Galway scored 6 of the last 8 points. That was a good sign, but you could also flip it around and say they were under pressure. Kilkenny were minus Adrian Mullen, Owen Cody, Owen Murphy, 3 of arguably their top players. So for Galway to dig out a result, considering they were down late on and Evan Nyland got a nice free and Conor Whelan then a lovely equaliser, overall, considering the fact that they were trailing in the second half, it was probably a good point. But at the same stage, you have to throw in the caveat that Kilkenny were down 3 serious players there, and they were, Kilkenny brought trademark kind of Kilkenny defiance, and they caused Galway plenty of bother throughout the match. But nonetheless, Galway did demonstrate a bit of grit, and I think going to Wexford next weekend, obviously Wexford had a hugely, bitterly disappointing result in Belfast on Saturday, losing to Antrim, but they'll be pumped up for the Galway game. Their season is on the line, and I think that's going to be a tough game for Galway, because Wexford have responded following disappointing defeats before. Remember last year they lost to Westmeath, they came out fighting then against Kilkenny, so there is good performances in them. And if you look at their league form, and they obviously drew with Dublin, they threw that game away as well. That was a disappointing game. They only drew with Dublin the first game, but they drew 3 of their 5 league games, so they're hard to beat. And obviously they'll be disappointed with how the game went, how they finished against Antrim. But I think it's a tricky game for Galway going down to Wexford, because they're going to be pumped up for it.
Tricky. And a few people remarked to me, just speaking about the game earlier today, that we have Gavin Lee, great to see him coming on the scene. other Evan Nyland, these players, but we're still going back to players that were there 7, 8, 9, and 10 years ago. It's a wonder, you know, have we a clear pathway of people coming through? Is there something wrong, or is it just the fact that we have to realise we got to play with what we've got?
Yeah, I wouldn't be as positive about the performance now as John. I do accept that they came out fighting at the end, and you probably need that bit of experience within the team to be able to eke out even a draw at that stage. But like the biggest concern for me, whether it's the players coming through or what it is, but like Galway got off to a flying start. Kilkenny adjusted a little bit and Galway were left wanting. There's a good portion of the match there where there's maybe the end of the first half started second half where Kilkenny just simply outplayed them and Galway had no answers. And you know, Henry Shefflin didn't have any answers on the sideline from what I could see either, which is a cause for concern. And whether the solution to that is to bring in younger players and give them a chance and get them the experience. Like Evan Ireland, when he came on, had a point to prove. Like there was no doubt, he was, even in the interview afterwards, you could tell he was frustrated not starting. And that's fair enough. You know, he came on, he proved his point, and he'd probably start, given that performance, he'd probably start against Wexford. But I think, I don't know if the players are there, and I don't know enough about it, but I think they're going to have to do something, because at the moment, and there's the debate on the Sunday game whether the Leinster Championship, how competitive it is and all that, but at the end of it all, if they want to compete for All-Irelands or even get up to second place behind Limerick, where everyone is kind of fighting for at the moment, they're going to need to do something. And whether that's bringing younger players or change up something, change up tactically or whatever, they're going to have to do something there.
A lot of the argument is put forward that we need a bit of silverware. And when you go back and think that goal in the dying embers of the Leinster final last year is now becoming more significant. If Galway had got a bit of silverware, we don't know what would have happened. You cannot go back on history lads all the time. But would it be right in saying that if we maybe got that bit of silverware, it might have done something for us? And a second part of the question as well is, we're reduced in the last 7 to 8 minutes of bombing balls down on top of Johnny Glynn. Great servant. I've been out of the scene since 2019 for obvious reasons. But is this just a revert? Was it kind of a, just we'll try this one last time to try and get a result?
But I wouldn't totally agree with that, George, because I thought that there was signs, particularly in the first half, and it was illustrated by the goal where Conor Whelan got a flick onto a ball with like a trademark kind of hard bravery, really sheer bravery. Brian Concannon, Kyle Mannion, lovely skill from the two of them, and then a goal from Gavin Lee, and it was a real Eamon O'Shea playbook from Tipperary, just classy kind of forward play. So there was evidence of classy play at various stages, not all the time. But Jonathan Glynn has so much to offer still. And if you need ball winners, and you need players that are capable of winning possession. So I think that he certainly has a role to play. And I think that if he's willing to stay here in Ireland and commit to it for the couple of months, it's a great addition for Galway.
I see him coming on, they look to the side, right, we need to just mark this man.
Yeah, but they have to mark any player. Yeah. But I know what you're saying, but I still think that he has something to offer, because you have plenty of pacey players in the Galway attack. So there is a variety there, I think. So I wouldn't fully agree with that, but I do think what you're saying about the silverware, there's substance to that in the sense that, especially if you win Leinster, you're through to an All-Ireland semi-final, and that's a massive...
It's one less tough game you have.
One less tough game. Like last year, Galway played Tipperary and was a good win in the quarter-final, but then you're going in to play Limerick in an All-Ireland semi-final. Limerick are particularly strong at the moment, so you'd think that going on form that they're the likely Munster champions, even though Clare and others, I'm sure, will have plenty to say about that. But my point is that if you can avoid the Munster champions, it's just a smoother path. So you get the silverware, and Kilkenny have won 4 Leinsters in a row, kind of almost unnoticed, and Galway haven't won one since 2018. Wexford won in 19. So that's a good while without winning a province where you don't have maybe as many competitors as Munster.
Most definitely. But at the end of the day, we're no closer to finding out what's going to happen. A lot of people, Adrian said yesterday, was shadow boxing. Far from it, in my view. But there's still an element of truth in that opinion that it was addressed.
But there still is... like it's all, it wasn't do or die, like. So there's always going to be that element of how will they react. Would they be able to get the draw? Would they kick on and get a win if it was an All-Ireland, if it was a Leinster final, which is probably the two teams that meet in the Leinster final, or if it was further on the competition? And that's something that you can't know, and you can't really replicate an All-Ireland semi-final or final in when you have a round robin of the championship. But it still was a tough match. It was still physical. It was, I don't know how much shadow boxing was going on. Both teams were determined to win it, but I do take the point that Kilkenny were missing two or three players, and I just found Galway that little bit, found that little bit wanting. Like, if the two teams were to meet next week in the Leinster final, you'd have to say Kilkenny would be favourites, and that's the worrying bit as far as I can see.
Yeah, it is. It is a worrying bit, and I suppose, as you say, if they met next week, but they probably will meet in a Leinster final, one would think. But lads, John, you alluded to earlier on the first hour of the programme, who saw Antrim beating Wexford coming, lads?
No one. I was here in studio. I can count on the fingers of one hand the amount of times I've been very close to swearing, and that was one of them, because I couldn't believe what I was seeing on the screen in front of me. And as well as that, it wasn't a fluke. It wasn't by any ways Wexford, you know, going completely wrong or something like that. And Antrim were truly deserving of it. The 2 points they got in the end to actually win the game, to see it out, were of the highest quality. And Wexford did not have a single answer. Now, in saying that, that does make next Saturday actually all the more exciting, to be honest with you, because Wexford are at home in front of their own crowd, who will be baying for blood after what happened last Saturday. And Galway are going there knowing that a win sees them settling up nicely towards a possible Leinster final. We're now in championship in all but name. Forget the last number of weeks. This coming Saturday onwards, we're now talking about the championship, truly, in my opinion. And that's why that's going to make 4 o'clock next Saturday all the better. The Kilkenny game will be forgotten come 4 o'clock on Saturday, because this is where we will have to see a championship Galway side put in a championship performance, because if they don't, Wexford could hijack them, and then we could have a much different conversation here next Monday.
Yeah, I think this is the crucial game. Obviously it's crucial for Wexford, but it's even probably more crucial for Galway, because a victory sets you up rightly. You virtually know then that you're in a Leinster final, and you can be targeting that. You know who you're going to be playing most likely. But from a broader context, Cian, and you cover Gaelic games throughout the country and you listen to a lot of people, you'll be talking to a lot of people, is this, I won't say it's a moral victory, but is it a victory that gives hope to the Antrims? An awful lot of work has gone into Antrim over the years. They've brought in high profile coaches over the years, but this team actually delivered on Saturday, and I think it will do more, hopefully, for the game in that part of the country than any type of funding or any type of involvement by other people will.
No, completely, because a passion exists for the game there, and Darren Gleeson, the manager, has been with Antrim for 4 or 5 years at this stage, and he's done great work. Like, they've obviously gone between the Joe McDonagh and the Leinster Championship, but in the last couple of years, they've had some gutsy performances, where, as you said, they've probably had those moral victories, but when you get moral victories, you want to get actual victories, and they've done that, and they've done it, and Galway have to go up there in a couple of weeks, and Saturday's evidence suggests that it's going to be a tough game, because unless you're firmly focused, Antrim can deliver, and they had a disappointing game against Kilkenny in the opening round, but they were primed to respond, and that's what they did. But Darren Gleeson really has done good work. I remember actually interviewing him before a Joe McDonagh final, maybe COVID times around 2020, and at that time he explained how he got into it. Liam Sheedy used to do a bit of coaching with Antrim, but when he went up there, he was initially just doing work with the goalkeepers, and he just became, I suppose,
he
bought into it, and he saw that there was a passion there for the game, and in the league this year they were down a couple of players who have returned for the championship, and that might have been an impact in their first game, in that they probably needed another week or two together, and to get a win against Wexford. And Wexford were, like, they had Lee Chin in excellent form, but still Antrim were able to deal with it. And you are right, George, that a win like that, the effect it can have, the boost it can give the club game in that county, because that's a really competitive club championship with high quality teams who've delivered on the nationals, Ulster and national stages. So players are in Antrim, and it's just a matter of getting that hope. We can all remember 1989. We can remember other times where they went close in All Ireland series matches. So to get that win, they have a solid foundation to build on now.
What does it say though about Wexford? Because we've seen Wexford where they had the incarnation of Davy Fitzgerald, they've gone back, and they're capable, like we seen last year with Kilkenny, but there's no consistency. It's something that you wouldn't have said years ago about Wexford teams. Granted, they may not have won as many Leinster championships as they would like, but they were always able to put it up to Kilkenny in the old school Leinster championship. But now they're kind of found wanting, lads, are they?
I have a theory on that. Davy Fitzgerald goes in and he puts so much into the team and takes so much commitment, dedication, fitness and everything. I don't think it's sustainable for a long period of time. So when he goes, there's almost a kind of a drop back a level.
And he's
in terms of intensity. He's like Mourinho.
He's a Mourinho type figure, really, yeah. Isn't he, Adrian? That he does 2 years, maybe three, that's it.
But the level of intensity he brings when he leaves, the intensity is inevitably going to drop because you can't keep that going all the time. And Wexford are probably just on the downward of the intensity and have been caught badly by Antrim. But the other side of that is, it's not only great for Antrim, it's also good for all the other small counties who are trying to progress and trying to push on, and they're looking going, oh, you can get a win. There is a pathway here to actually win a few games.
You look at Carlow. I mean, they put it up to Galway a couple of weeks ago. And this is, I know, looking at me like that, George, but I still talk about I was asked, what was my game of the year last year? My game of the year last year was the Joe McDonald final between Carlow and Offaly. It's one of the greatest games you'll ever see in hurling. The scoreline, the extra time, everything that went with it. It was just pure drama beginning to end. And you know what? You look at the likes of Carlow and the likes of Antrim and teams like that, that we need these teams. Because, you know, okay, they're not going to be challenging for All-Ireland titles, but they're still going to give us something to talk about and something to smile about. And one of these days, they're going, Antrim have to play Dublin yet, remember. And I wouldn't put it past them beating them. And then that turns the whole Leinster Championship on its head. So, let's see.
And saying that, Micheál Donoghue must be scratching his head, lads. Dublin fell over the line against Carlow. Do you know... We'll see what
again, my point about Carlow.
Are they on Dublin need a win? Wherever they're going to find it out. You know, they seem to be just, I won't say off the pace, but they're just not.
There's been a huge turnover in players, George, with Dublin over the last couple of years. Just players unavailable, some guys, key players who were away travelling and just unavailable. So Micheál Donoghue's been forced to deal with that, and they've obviously had to integrate a lot of younger players. So I think that's probably an aspect there. But they did show tremendous fight to get a draw against Wexford in the first game, to get a draw there, and that could be a key point. But John is right in that they have critical matches coming up, but they have talent, and when they get going, particularly at Parnell Park, they can be hard to beat. But I think that to answer your question, they've had to deal with the absence of a lot of, I suppose, more experienced players, and they've been given guys chances throughout the league and now into the Championship too.
Well, that's it, of course, Galway will host Dublin in a couple of weeks' time in Pearse Stadium. It's another one we'll have to look forward to. But what we have to look forward to now is take a short ad break, come back, and we'll discuss what happened in Munster hurling yesterday.
Over the line in association with Supermax, home of the fresh 100% Irish chicken breast sandwich. Always fresh, never frozen. Visit supermax.ie. You're listening to Over the Line on Galway Bay FM. The Sporting Sound of Galway.
And you're very welcome back to part two in our panel discussion at Over the Line with this evening with myself, George McDonough, John Mulligan, Adrian O'Neill and Cian O'Connell. We looked back on the Leinster Championship, the Galway involvement. What's next for Galway, of course, to see what's going to happen. It's going to be a crucial weekend, the next weekend of fixtures. But yesterday in Munster, Limerick played 2-1-2, points plus difference of 18, 4 points... They annihilated Tipperary. Tipperary weren't on the same plane. And I don't think they were out of third gear, lads, Limerick.
Well, they've maximum points. George, Clare got into a commanding position against them in Cusack Park, but Limerick found a way, and yesterday maybe tipped 100 into it in the first half to an extent, but Limerick can deal with every type of scenario, it seems, at this stage. They can deal with injured players, they can deal with all sorts of different challenges, but they're undoubtedly the team to beat, and they have 4 points pocketed, and they'll be happy, and it'll be all to play for the other two spots. You have Waterford playing Tip next Saturday evening in a key game, so the matches are coming thick and fast in the Munster Championship.
And of course Cahill, that's the other caveat here, is that he deserved to one to move to another. And you look at Limerick, that I read in one snippet of a newspaper report today that in the crowd of almost 33,500, that a lot of people felt that the Limerick support was in the ascendancy, numbers wise. That's something you'd have never heard of, lads, at Semple Stadium.
But it was in Limerick, George.
Oh, sorry, in Limerick. My apologies. But sorry, I know where I'm going wrong here. 33,475. Limerick beat them easily. Tipperary didn't throw up as much as what we thought we would. And Limerick, as I said, third gear, but I don't know. I listened to John Kiley afterwards whilst he was concerned with the horrific injury. Peter Casey, what will this affect them much? Or they just, I don't know, they're just ruthless though.
They just, in the last number of years, they've had injuries to Sean Finn, Mike Casey, Keane Lynch, Declan Hannan, missed in All-Ireland. So at various stages, they've been able to deal with the absence of key players. They have significant depth. Their players are any emerging players, the likes of Cathal O'Neill. They're coming into a setup where there's an established team. So in certain respects, it can be, not saying it's easy, but it can be easier if you're only blending in one or two new players rather than a whole six or seven.
What Kylie's interview afterwards to the media was, he said something which I can't get out of my head. And they were talking about Peter Casey's injury, and he was saying, you know, we'll support him and we'll do everything, we'll give him the best of treatment and all this stuff, but as a group, we move on. That is scary.
Yeah.
When a manager kind of goes, look, it's awful bad, it's really terrible that's happened, but we're moving on. Almost like, thanks very much.
It's not really win at all costs, John. But I don't think, even though what we've seen
those words, it's like you've that's it, job done, full stop, we go.
It'd be like Brian Cody when he's with Kilkenny, it's a team and we have to manage it, and whoever's there is there and whoever's not is not.
Maybe sentiment, there's no room for sentiment with these lads.
There's probably not, no, but go back again, you know, Tipperary, you have to be disappointed with them, but last week when Clare led Limerick, I thought maybe there's some sort of a maybe they are fallible, you know, that there is a chance. But Clare yesterday proved, I suppose, that they didn't really melt last week, because it was a good performance by them. They had to come back twice really against Cork. But I go back to Tipperary, you're wondering, like Wexford, but like Tipperary, they seem to be just off the pace. That's what's, you know, it's strange to me.
Or is it just an air of invincibility about Limerick? Like, we're seeing this, like with Dublin and Leinster, and like Kerry, if you want to go back to the 80s, where teams took them on, could be outstanding, but it's because of the opposition they're facing that they're kind of inferior almost. And that was the case with Tipperary, that they're on a hiding to nothing.
Like 15 points, a fair trimming.
Tipperary's still very proud. Like, it hasn't been, when the difference is, it hasn't been that long since Tipperary were top of the pile, like, you know. I know Limerick have been there the last, what, 5, 6, 7 years, but so Tipperary have always traditionally been thereabouts. It was a surprisingly poor result, and I would say performance as well, from Tipperary, and it is something they should be concerned about, because the likes of Tipperary, no more than Galway and Kilkenny and those, they should be looking at how to win in All-Ireland, how to take out Limerick. That should be their focus, and that certainly wasn't the focus in Tipperary. They were trying to survive and it didn't go well for them, so it'd be concerning that their motivation or whatever it is wasn't, they don't seem to be looking the right direction. They seem to be kind of holding on rather than saying, right, how do we beat them, how do we have a cut of them?
Like, you look at one of the, social media has good and bad things. One of the great fun things I always watch on social media is Cork when they lose. Lord above the Cork hurlers, it is, can be carnage on it, and every player is, there's nobody, everybody gets a skin in. But you look at what's happening at that table. Waterford play at Tipperary next. If Waterford win there, and if Limerick beat Cork, both Cork and Tipperary are gone from the Championship. There's no way they're that bad. You know, the Munster Championship is so competitive compared to Leinster, where we're looking at a good result for Antrim that might have livened up the probably predictable but side
if,
of it.
Even Cork, they still have an outside chance, George. If
they
like,
have, but they
like
need,
it's
they
a long shot.
Beat, they have to
they'd
beat
have
Limerick
to, beat,
to start.
They'd have to beat Limerick, and that's not a not an easy task. But I think that when you lose your first two games, particularly in the Munster Championship, you're certainly on the back foot. But they're not without hope. They still have a chance, but it's going to take. It's a tall order.
They lost the first two last year, but didn't have to play Limerick in the third round. So, yeah, there is still a chance, but it's hard to see them beating Limerick.
No, I would agree. I just think, you know, I just look at the tables in front of you there, and they tell you that look, Clare, I still think could be the biggest threat to Limerick in a national sense. In that, I would not be surprised to see Limerick and Clare meet in an All Ireland final. I don't know why it's a sentiment with me, but I think Brian Lohan has been fighting behind the eight ball for a few years. He's a bit of freedom now and he might just get it. But look, they needed to have that success yesterday. But you look at Limerick, there are probably odds on at this stage, I think, to win an All-Ireland title. But that's for that. Football, lads, the intensity of those hurling games yesterday, especially the two in Munster to a certain extent, and to see, what was it, 13,000 people in Croke Park?
21,000 in an 82,000 seater stadium for a double header of Leinster football semi-finals. The last time the crowd was this low was 18,000, and that was in 2021, and that was down to a restricted audience because of COVID.
Yeah, even the Dubs don't have that, you know, that's the X factor, is it? Or are the people just getting priced out of it? Because it's funny.
Maybe they're all looking for Leinster tickets.
This is it, because people, actual pundits, made out about that yesterday. And it's a discussion maybe for another day, and a detailed discussion about this championship. Because a couple of pundits made the case that 83,000 people, granted that some of the ticket prices were quite low, will be watching a rugby game in the GAA headquarters on Saturday next. And the paltry attendance, and rightly so possibly, the statement made last night on TV that it's time to take the semi-finals out of Croke Park. You know, what do you think?
Well, there's no justification for having them in with the small crowds. You'd be better off bringing them off to Parnell Park, anywhere in Leinster, that hosts 20,000-25,000 and get them in. There's two problems with the low crowds. Number one is you have to question the ticket price, of course, because part of the reason the rugby will fill it is because they're going to give out tickets, essentially. You know, they're going to make it kind of palatable for people. But the other side of it is, is it a genuine competition, the Leinster Championship? And why would you go and watch a game where it's almost a foregone conclusion? Why would you go off, even if the game isn't, the championship is? We know Dublin are going to win the Leinster Championship. We know nothing's going to happen. And I know there's always a chance in sport, but there's not really, like, you know, unfortunately.
I spoke to a great friend of mine from Louth today, and I says, Walter, we had the game yesterday. No, he says, I didn't travel, he says, for other reasons. I said, I thought you were in with Todd, he says, and I won't be going to the Leinster final either, he says, because what are we going to do? He says, it'll be one-way traffic. It serves nothing. They don't even expect to hold a candle, Louth, that is, to Dublin, and probably rightly so. And then we have the added caveat, lads, and correct me here if I'm wrong, the draw for the group stages of the football is taking place tomorrow online. Now, there's four provincial finals to come. As was alluded to by many people yesterday evening, the last probably one of the last third place teams anyone wants to face will be Derry. So if you're grouped in them, and Galway, the losers of Galway and Mayo will become a second seed, and if they're grouped with Derry, or if indeed the winners are grouped with Derry, are we seeing a case where it might not be beneficial, depending on the draw, to win your provincial title?
Well, George, the one thing that I would say is that the All-Ireland group stages commence on the weekend, May 17th and 18th, that particular weekend, a fortnight after, 3 weeks from yesterday, or this weekend, right? So if you were saying that the draw was to take place on the Monday, ahead of people would be criticising the fact that the draw is taking place 5 or 6 days out from matches that are going to be taking place. Teams don't have the chance to prepare. They don't know who they're playing. So there's that argument.
There is. But is it adding fuel to the fire what people think that the season is too condensed? Let's.
Well, that's a different argument, George. Like that's a what
is
I was
this, is the necessity that they have to make the draw this early because they have to logistically allow counties to plan.
Well, it there was nothing surer than if the draw was taking place on the Sunday night of the, let's say, the 12th of May, the day of the Leinster and Ulster finals. If the draw was to take place that night with matches taking place the following Saturday, counties, and they would be right to criticise the fact that for logistical reasons, for tactical reasons, for preparation reasons, for knowing what they're at. So at least by tomorrow evening, everyone, the 16 counties, fair enough, they will all have at least 2 weeks to plan for their first game. And I think that's in the modern era, that's fair enough time.
Ulster football, the weekend, Jimmy's winning matches still. They went extra time to beat Tyrone, but they've done it. Armagh overcoming down eventually, but Jimmy, is he getting a tune out of this Donegal side?
No, absolutely, George, and that little bit of momentum that they've generated.
The Jimmy factor, is it?
Yeah, they got promotion early, mm-hmm. and that was I suppose box one ticked. Then they went into the Ulster Championship. They had a difficult draw, and they've thundered through their two matches. They're going into an Ulster final. They're going to be playing Armagh, who were unfortunate to lose last year's Ulster final, and they've had a number of defeats on penalties in big matches, including an All-Ireland quarter-final against Galway. So Armagh have been very, very close, but that game in Clonus, you're talking about teams looking at draws. There's one thing for certain, Armagh and Donegal are going to be going for that Ulster final, because that's a prize that they really value. And sat the last couple of Ulsters that Donegal won convincingly against Cavan and Fermanagh, and they celebrated those wins, George. It means a lot to Donegal, no more than it means to Armagh. It's a long time since they've won an Ulster title, so that's a game to really whet the appetite.
It sure is. When the next Sunday, before, I know we're having a detailed preview, I think, John, on Galway BFM on Friday night next.
Yep, there's a full preview of the Connacht final on Friday, and also another one on Sunday. We'll keep you up to date on what's on both of them, but we'll be building up nicely to Sunday's Connacht final. But on the point, you know, me, I'm of the line of thinking, you know, what's the harm with having it on a Sunday and giving the 5 or 6 days to prepare, because that's the way they seem to be doing things anyway in the GAA.
I mean, wouldn't agree with that.
The reason being, I've seen it happen, Keane, in the past where there's been games played, and I remember actually the announcement on the Monday and the game being on, you know, being the following Sunday, because
that was in a different era when you had knockout qualifiers. Yeah, so this is like a group stage.
Yeah, and the way that the group is lined out now, I mean, Galway know they're going to be first or second seeds, regardless of what happens. And then you've got the third seeds, which feature Derry, also features Roscommon, who I still think have a part to play in some way, shape or form in it, and of course the fourth seeds in it. So we know who the third and fourth seeds are, so we'll have a rough idea of who they're playing, and they'll be at home anyway for the first round. So if I think our biggest problem in Gaelic football is that the element of excitement is gone, and there doesn't seem to be any G up whatsoever. I mean, we all remember days where Connacht finals were played and you'd have 2 or 3 weeks to build up for it, and it'd be pure hype and excitement in the entire week in the build up to it. I know today is only Monday, but already I'm already sensing it's a Connacht final issue. There's, you know, the group stages to come after that. What's there to play for? And I think if they did something like that, okay, it might be a little bit inconvenient, but why not? Give it a whack.
No, I understand what you're saying, John, but everyone talks about weeks and we had 2 weeks or 3 weeks, but at the end of the day, the split season was brought in. Obviously, I understand the argument that, of course, you'd love to have 2 weeks rolling into every game, but for club players, and the argument was that club players needed a defined season, that has been provided in the last year or two. And when we get to September, August, September time, particularly in Galway, we're fortunate. We have a feast of club activity, hurling 1 week, football the next week, sure. And it rolls on. So people are talking about weeks and 2 weeks and 3 weeks, but the time, if you do that, you're denying the club game, which is what this was brought in for. So I think no matter what the GA do, they're getting criticised, which I just find it, yeah, like it's fine. Of course, we'd love to have 2 weeks leading into every match, but that's not just the way it is at the moment.
They're damned if they do and they're damned if they don't, aren't they?
But the other side of it is, there's a lot of nonsense games as well, in all the bar Ulster. There's a lot of unnecessary games happening, taking up time. And I think the competition structure, I have no problem with the condensed season. I think it's great for the club game what's happened. But at the inter-county level, I think they're wasting a lot of time on unnecessary games that aren't drawing crowds, that aren't exciting people, that aren't getting the media coverage. So why are they being played?
Yeah, I have a question. Is the feeling of jeopardy gone?
Yeah, but a lot of it is the fact that the people believe that the provincial championships are probably of yesteryear. Are they going to go the way of the Railway Cup, or those that remember the old Oireachtas tournaments and whatnot? We see pre-season tournaments, you know, have their place in the calendar. I think they tried to fix something too quickly, maybe, but Adrian's point is well made, that we do have a lot of nonsense games and games that they're foregone conclusions. And most people in football will tell you that it's when we come to the group stages, that's when we're going to see what's going to happen. In the end, we're getting rid of very few teams to leave 16. That's what you're happening. These, at the end of the day, despite a few hairy results here, 12 of those 16 teams would technically consider themselves to be good enough to contest an All-Ireland final. I know there's Kerry and Dublin are probably a little bit ahead of everybody else at the moment, but most of them counties would be able to think that they're capable of getting to an All-Ireland final. And before we go to another ad break, lads, I'm going to ask you a question. Galway and Mayo Sunday, who wins, Keane?
Galway.
John?
Galway.
Adrian?
I hope Galway.
It's amazing. Like, those tickets went on sale last week, and on Friday, I think, and the stand of 8,500 was sold out. Within a couple of hours, the Mayos are coming here. There's no doubt about it. But Galway going for a 3 in a row. I think we badly, if ever we needed to win a Connacht title, it's this year, because they've had a lot of setbacks. And I think for their...
My concern is that they've had too many disruptions. They haven't been able to settle on a team and get a game or two out of them. And that's the concern. I think the talent is there and all that, and they've won in previous years. But that's my concern going into this year. The Mayo seem to be kind of just on a smoother kind of trajectory than Galway are. And
possibly, but maybe the mental side of things... if Galway can win, it's the effect it will have on the
mentality. Absolutely.
I think going forward,
you could have players hopefully coming back in the next couple of weeks, so to just get that bit of momentum
with the emphasis on hopefully. It's time for our final ad break of the hour. Come back after these, we could be lauding new Premier League champions.
Over the Line, in association with Supermax, where the best post-match analysis takes place. Download our new app today. Listening to Over the Line on Galway Bay FM, the sporting sound of Galway.
And you're very welcome back to the final section of our panel discussion with myself, George McDonough, John Mulligan, Adrian O'Neill and Cian O'Connell. And keep you up with what's happening in national sport. It's currently Shamrock Rovers 4, Drogheda United 0, and Drogheda beginning to, and Dundalk, although the input of Noel King might see a kick up there, but... Going back firstly on the soccer scene to Friday night last in Talla Stadium, when Galway United almost pulled off the shock of this particular round of fixtures. I'm going to call it a spade. I thought they were hard done by, Keane.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that assessment, George. Galway United's record against Shamrock Rovers in Dublin is dreadful over the last 30 years. They haven't won since the RDS in 1994, a day I was the mascot, George, that long ago. Two wins in a row in two seasons. They won the previous season 5-2 with the RDS. I was a mascot that day as well. So my two Galway United appearances were two wins and both at the RDS. But in the intervening 30 years, there's been plenty of pain against Shamrock Rovers, even though obviously Galway United haven't been in the Premier Division since 6 or 7 years ago. But to get back there and to compete at that level with a really determined display, a gutsy display, and Stephen Walsh came off the bench, scored a brilliant goal. Brendan Clark made a great save from a penalty, and Galway United were very, very much in the game. Then it just appeared that there was a foul on Ed McCarthy in the build-up to the Shamrock Rovers goal. Subsequently, from a corner kick, they scored 1-1, and Galway United did well to close it out to get a point, because it's not often you get a point in Talla. But to go back to your question, yes, George, they didn't get much on the evening, but nonetheless they showed great fight and great heart, and that's an encouraging sign.
We've seen a smash and grab, or that's what I call it, in the Brandywell, where Stephen Walsh got onto a long ball. Whilst it was a similar goal as on Friday night, it was better executed. It was a move, and it was a superb finish, I thought, because you're wondering would he finish, but it was a superb finish. And you begin to think then at that stage that Galway United have actually arrived, in fairness, and have done very, very well. We're, what, a third of the way through the season. But I just thought that they, their performance and their organisational, the structure of them on Friday night was absolutely superb.
No, completely. They've played 12 games, George. They've won 4, drawn 4, lost 4. They've been competitive in every single game. The only disappointing display was against Bohemians at home when they lost 2-0. But every other game, they've only, in any of the defeats, they've only lost by one goal. And they've been very, very resilient defensively. And that's a great credit to goalkeeper Brendan Clark and to the two centre-halves, Rob Slevin and Killian Bruder, who were both outstanding in Tallaght Stadium on Friday evening. At the full-back positions, Colm Horgan and Regan Donlan have shipped knocks in recent weeks, but Shannon Essua and Alameen Kazim have come in, and they really are beginning to deliver.
Kazim has been
very pacey, and even early on against Rovers, Dara Burns was causing United a bit of difficulty, but in fairness to Kazim, he stuck at the task and he did quite well, and he's great pace going forward, so he's certainly an addition. And it's just good that there's a bit of fight in Galway United, George, because we've discussed this here previously on numerous occasions, where throughout the, we talked about the last 30 years, and in times Galway United have been soft, and they haven't had the spirit and the resolve that they have now. And you'd have to give great credit to John Caulfield and Ollie Horgan for instilling that bit of bite into Galway United again.
You speak of the bite, and what I like about it, lads, is that when they go in front, now from watching them regularly where we do, you already know what's going to happen. If they get in front, especially in the second half of a game, they revert to this, I won't call it a defensive style of play, but more of a containing style of play. What we have, we'll hold. But the way, and to back up your point about the coaching, everybody seems to know their job. And I think that's...
And the most impressive thing about the Shamrock Rovers, when it did go 1-1, you mentioned it, Keen, there's a fear at that stage that it's going to end up at 2-3, even 3-1. And there was none of that. It was just very, and as you said, everyone knew their job. Just because Shamrock Rovers had scored didn't change what their job was. And there's that kind of everyone on the same script and everyone on the same page when they're playing. And it's the only chance to have a success, but it's doing really well. Like, there's no game, as you said, there's no game where they've looked like they shouldn't be in that division. They look better than a lot of teams, and they're well able to compete with them all. And but it is because the structures, and huge credit has to go to John Caulfield and Ollie Horgan. They've done a great job of preparing the team for all these games, because it's tough when you get up first. And like, I remember being here a few months ago, and we were talking about they were favourites in the bookies to go down, to go straight back down. They're nowhere near it now. I don't think anyone's going to be talking realistically about them. I know it's only a third of the way through the season, but the reality is they are mid-table justifiably, and you could even say a bit more luck, they could be a bit further up. So I think they have the fight along with the game plan, along with the kind of spirit and the faith in the plan. It's not just having a plan, it's that they're all willing to buy into it and stick with it, which shows they actually believe it. And once you have that, you have a chance in every game.
One of my pet peeves always is referees, but I thought they were almost road on Friday night, because number one, there was 5 minutes of injury time put up. We ended up playing 9.5, and during that extra injury time, on 3 occasions, soft frees were given to Rovers, and each of them in significantly dangerous positions from a defensive point of view. And is that something we're going to be watching, or is it just me losing the run of myself?
No, I think that the last couple of games, I was in the showgrounds last Monday as well, Galway United were on the attack, and there was a collision involving the Sligo goalkeeper Ed McGinty and their right full J.R. Wilson, and the game was stopped just as Carlo Sullivan was hooking the ball. Now you can argue that one all night long, but these little decisions,
it would have been different last week if it was a clash between two opposing players.
Yeah,
but basically the goalkeeper injured his own player, and I think they should have copped the consequences.
Yeah, no, it's just, well, the decision there was certainly debatable. And on Friday, in the build-up to the goal, you mentioned the Rovers did get a couple of soft free kicks late on. And throughout the game, when United had attacking set pieces, there was a number of frees given against Galway United at times when they were beginning to threaten from those situations. So it's I suppose that's just what you have to deal with at this level when you go to grounds like that, where the home crowd can be vociferous, etc.
Being vociferous is one thing. Watching managers and players arguing is another.
What are you talking about, Sean?
I wonder, and as I like to refer to him as a little clippity, did Clippity get it wrong? We've thought of this programme for a while, well, I will anyways, that Clipperty got it wrong by announcing he was going when he did. And the spat between himself and Mo Salah on the sideline on Saturday has now getting, it's gone all over the place. It's got, to say it's gone viral is an understatement. And all is not well there. And then there's the summation today that the rival back of Michael Edwards, who was the guy that left before when Klopp took over, and the fact that Edwards, the FSG wanted to come, Edwards to come back because of the way he could get the structure behind the scenes working, and they're on about expanding their footballing interests. And this is the reason maybe that Mr. Klopp is going. I wonder if there's any consequence to that. I do not know. But it seems to me that the ownership group are certainly in control there, and they're basically want Edwards back.
So, I mean, I, to be honest, I've had very little interest in it because, frankly, I couldn't care less. look, Klopp shouldn't have said what he said. I think he said he was going in the hope of finishing off on an absolute ultra high, winning the quadruple and all that goes with it. Look, it's gone very wrong for them. Yeah, knocked out of Europe last Saturday, killed their chances of winning the Premier League, gone in the FA Cup. I mean, what have they got left? Very little, to be honest with you. It's not going to be the fantastic finish that Klopp was hoping for and a lot of his Liverpool supporters were looking for, but look, it is what it is. And this new guy that's coming in from Holland, who has won the Dutch League last season, Dutch Cup this season, they're now putting a lot of expectation on his shoulders, so we'll see how Pep gets on. But
they also threw into the caveat that the reason Alonso wouldn't come to Liverpool is because he was only going to be recognised as a head coach rather than a manager. And this seems to be the way a lot of these clubs, we see it also at Manchester United, that they're saying that Ten Hag next year, if he's still there, I hope he is, that he will be recognised as a head coach rather than actually the manager. We'll talk about United in a couple of moments' time, but Arsenal atop the table, 80 points ahead of Manchester City. Is this the year that Arsenal could win the league?
Man City have a game in hand. We've had that caveat in there as well.
It has to be said that every time Arsenal are written off, they come back with something else. Now, they made hard work of yesterday. 3-0 up against Spurs. You know, Spurs came back at 3-2.
I actually think there's more in that Arsenal team this year. There's bite. There's, I won't say there's, they were bottlers in the past, but they'd go down softly. I think you will agree, Keane, but this Arsenal team, he's a man who's been there for 3-4 years. A lot of Arsenal supporters didn't want Arteta there. They were calling for his sacking last season before. But in fairness, he's got a group of players that has bought into his system, and they will go through Arden.
Yeah, and it's a nice segue from your previous point when you're talking about head coaches and managers, because when he went to Arsenal first, he was a head coach, and not long after he was made manager at a club, so it definitely has reverse, something there, yeah. in the sense that he obviously has a close relationship with Edu, who's I suppose in a sporting director of football type role. So off the pitch, Arsenal got a lot right since Arteta has come in, but he had to essentially clean up the squad, probably similar to Ten Hag, in that there was a lot of players that Arsenal didn't want.
Lacazette, he took it upon himself to get rid of them.
They did sign players who were experienced, the likes of Willian, but generally the signings were quite young, hungry players. Now at various stages they had to pivot, and maybe when they didn't get Mudrick, they signed Trossard, who's been very, very good acquisition, and they've signed players with a bit of experience like Kiwior, but Ben White, players like that who had a couple of seasons in the top flight have done very well. But the journey has been good, in the sense that they won a cup, FA Cup, early in his reign. That gave a bit of a boost. They had a bad start to the following season, but they kind of remain patient, and that patience is, I suppose, being rewarded now, that they stuck with Arteta, and it's a tall order for them to win the league, George. I think that even if they win all of the remaining games, City could too. And Arsenal have a tricky game at Old Trafford, tricky game even against an informed Bournemouth on Saturday. Every game is demanding in its own way at this stage of the season. They certainly have a chance, but it's City are still, just as Liverpool have found out over the last number of years, it's really hard to overcome them.
I just think City are going to, there's something going to happen, they're going to slip up somewhere along the line. I just have that feeling, and which thrill it would be for me, moving to my own beloved Manchester United. And the revelation today by James Ducker, I think it was, a man you'd give him a bit of credence to, the 23 of the current 25 man first team squad could be up for sale. Now, some of these will be leaving on a free and they'll be out the door, but that just shows you the state of the club that is, that I passionately love, but it's an absolute shambles is all I can call it.
Well, it's been a shambles now for the last few years. They haven't been able to get any structure. Like you mentioned there, Arteta and been manager and getting things right off the pitch. United are the exact opposite. It's fallen apart on them repeatedly off the pitch. And that's led to the situation they're in now, where they're going to try and hold on to sixth, basically, by the end of the season. And like, Ten Hag has, I would say, an impossible job there, no matter what happens, unless they sort out the back room and sort out their structures. No manager in the world is going to be able to go in there and have success.
No, and I think there's more leaks in it than there is actually in the water system of the whole country here. There's leaks every time something happens. There's leaks coming out of the dressing room, and that just tells me about the influence agents have and so on and so forth. And the owners, let's say, are still the Glazers. I know we have a part owner in Radcliffe and Ineos who are trying to clean it up, but the people who own the club, that's what they went for. Jersey sellers who have more agents, by God, than James Bond had understudies in all the films that they made. But it is just ridiculous, and that's just endemic of the way that club has gone. And I still think it'll take Jim Ratcliffe and his crew at least three seasons to clear this mess up at minimum.
Yeah, but you're talking about Arsenal. That's the time frame it took Arteta over. At the moment, when you have transfer windows, you've only a certain, I suppose, time frame to move players on and to get players in. So it definitely is it's going to be a long process, and it could be a tough one too, George.
It sure could. Call you lads, who'll win the league? Adrian?
I'd say City will take it in the end. I don't see them losing.
Mr. Mulligan?
I hope it's Arsenal.
I know what you hope. Maybe they'll make you the mascot of the front on the final day, seeing that you brought so much great luck to Galway United the last time.
My only two appearances.
Still, they were good appearances. We're coming towards the end of the show, and we just again to inform you that on Friday night next in Garafron's, John?
Yeah, from 7 o'clock we'll be starting our build up to Connacht final weekend. Ollie will be there with a host of guests, so looking forward to that. First part will be on FM, and then if you want to listen to the rest of it, go to goalbfm.ie, because from around 7:45 we'll be heading to AM&DC Park.
We sure will, with Galway United again, and of course they're also in action next Monday away to Bowes. A critical weekend, I think, for Galway United.
It is, but don't forget the women are looking to break the record as well on Saturday afternoon when they take on DLR Waves at AM&DC Park. The tickets are free, by the way, if anyone wants to know, and they're available on the Galway United website.
They're available on the Galway United website, and we wish them well as well. They're having a very good season and they're going well. It was a good draw away from home on Saturday last. But that's it from myself, George McDonough, John Mulligan, Kieran O'Connell and Adrian O'Neill. Next week we'll be announcing our special guest in the next couple of days.
Over the Line, in association with Supermax and the Plaza Group, proudly fueling GAA supporters at the Galway Plaza, the N17 Plaza Tuam, Loughrea Service Station and the Kinnegad Plaza. The Plaza Group, the perfect pit stop on your journey.